Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Flames Talk on a Tuesday, April 22nd. It's Steinberg along with you wherever you get your podcasts and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's a Tuesday, which means we're checking in with our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. And Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff, DailyFaceoff.com. Amazon and a whole lot more. Hello, Mr. Saravalli. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you, Pat?
I'm good, man. You still buzzing from that Dallas Colorado game on Monday night?
It's pretty good. I'm at the airport getting set to fly home, and only one of my exes lives in Texas, not all of them.
That's good. I like that. Well, before we
so
dive
great
in,
time in my life.
What's that?
I said it was a great time in my life.
Yeah, it was. When only one of your exes lived in Texas. I like that. So, Frank, the last time we spoke was Tuesday of last week. We were getting ready for that big night where the Minnesota Wild, St. Louis Blues, and Calgary Flames all played with a playoff spot on the line. And in rather heartbreaking fashion, Flames were eliminated from playoff contention exactly 1 week ago. They end up finishing with 96 points, and they missed the playoffs via a tiebreaker. So 82 games in the books, a non-playoff year for the Flames for a third consecutive season. But how do you sum up the year for Calgary?
A complete surprise, honestly. I think the way this team entered the year with so few expectations, given the previous years, and given how many young players needed to be assimilated and needed to be relied upon, I don't know how to look at this year as anything but a success. Now, I know there's a subsection of your fan base, and I don't know why that is, and they pay money so they can do whatever they want, but there's a subsection of your fan base that wants this team to lose. And I understand the thought process, right? If you're lacking difference makers, the only true way to find them typically is to get them in the draft. Yeah. But the other part of that is you've never seen that a team truly bottom out on purpose with designs to tear it down and make it all the way back and win the Stanley Cup. It's never happened before. And as attractive as the idea is, ask Buffalo, Detroit, to a lesser extent Ottawa now because they're in, and some other teams that have been trying to claw their way back into the playoffs. That's not win a Stanley Cup. That's just get in the playoffs. It's hard to tear it down. And I don't think the Flames were ever in a position where they could contractually. And beyond that, I just don't know that it makes a ton of sense for your marketplace to do that. And so I think when you add all those things up and the play of Dustin Wolf and the other bright spots that are really still on the way, like this was supposed to be a maintenance year. This was supposed to be a hat season. What does that mean? You enter a period of time when you're trying to grow out your hair and you put on a hat because you don't want anyone to see your hair and what it looks like. And Flames have gotten through it and look a lot better on the other side because what that's going to look like is going to be pretty good.
We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. Frank, we're just going to drop you and reconnect. The cell line's a little dodgy, so want to make sure, see if we'll try anyway to see if we can get a stronger connection with Frank here in just a second. It's hour two of Flames Talk on a Tuesday. It's Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hurricanes have tied it on a Shane Gostisbehere goal early in the second period. Devils Hurricanes tied 1-1. That game going on right now in Raleigh as we speak. We've got Frank back right now. Let's see if this is any better. Frank, you got me?
Yes, I do. Is this better?
I think that does sound better. You're just dropping out a little bit, so we wanted to see if we could get a slightly better cell connection. So appreciate your patience and bearing with us on that front. Frank, you mentioned it. Like what next season might look like in the outlook. What is your outlook on this Flames group going into next year?
It's kind of hard to answer the question because I don't know what Craig Conroy and his staff have up their sleeve. I don't know how aggressive they're going to be. I would expect continued maturation. I would expect the Flames to be in conversations to try and, if they can, add goals. Now, I don't think they're going to sacrifice the future in order to do that. Meaning, if you're going to go out and acquire players, that they're going to be that age range that fits. And I think when you look at Dustin Wolf and his play this year, and, you know, I think the Calder race came down to, in the end, in my view, how these players played when it mattered most. And Lane Hutson helping the Montreal Canadiens get into the playoffs was enough for him to edge out Dustin Wolf on my ballot. But that said, when you look at Wolf, and I love the way that he responded in April, his numbers, he really struggled in March and came back and bounced back in a big way with so many games on the line, playoffs on the line. He really played well. And so I think when you take that and you smash it together with some of the other things I'm talking about and him continuing to progress, then that should all line up in a really positive way.
Hmm. Yeah. And what next year looks like for Dustin Wolf could go a long, long way in terms of what that, you know, the entire season looks like for the Flames next year, as could what the team decides to do with Rasmus Anderson and how that situation mm-hmm. plays itself out. What?
Hey,
yeah,
before
go ahead.
Before we get into Anderson, yeah. can I just add one thing on Wolf? Because you've said it and a lot of people have said it, and I understand where the thought process is because of the fickle nature of the position mm-hmm. that a lot of people are saying, hey, is a sophomore slump on tap? Like, what are we going to see next? All I know is looking at Dustin Wolf's game and his numbers, like, he hasn't faltered at any single step of the pro level. I don't know why anyone would expect that next season. And so development is never linear. It's think about the way this year started with Wolf. He didn't get the first start of the year. He didn't get a lot of the tough assignments. Dan Vladar did. And as a team player, it actually hurt Vladar's individual numbers this year based on the tough starts that he had to start the year. But I'm expecting Wolf to pick up right where he left off and continue to drag this team into the playoffs or close to it.
It's funny you bring that up, Frank, because our goaltending expert, we bring Kevin Woodley on from In Goal Magazine each week, and he essentially said the same thing last week. He basically said, hey, like, yeah, lots of goalies have an issue, but the fact that Wolf isn't going to the playoffs means that, you know, that hyper spotlight on each goaltender, not going to have his game picked apart the same way some other goalies are. And sometimes guys can get a little complacent in their habits. That's not who Dustin Wolf is. All this guy has been about is the opposite of complacent throughout his career. So why would that change now? Like, I, and it's a really good argument. Like, I don't know if this guy fits the mold as the typical sophomore slump goaltender.
This guy fits the mold of a guy who can be in the Vezina and Hart trophy conversations. Like, that's truly how valuable I think mm-hmm. Dustin Wolf is and how he's played himself to be. Like, look at what he's done at the AHL level and the trophies that he's been in range for. And now look at his impact at the NHL level. And by the way, the Flames, their top level management in Craig Conroy and their entire goalie staff and development group, they deserve a ton of credit because it would have been easy to take this guy after one phenomenal AHL season and say, hey, we're going to get his feet wet. And then after another one and say, you know what, this guy's ready to go. But it's been a slow burn. And I think it's been hugely beneficial to him. Even the way this year started, like, they're not throwing him to, pardon the pun, they're not throwing him to the wolves. They put him in a spot where he'd have a chance to succeed, and it was never too much at any one time. And I think, honestly, if you were to look at a map or chart a path for a goaltending journey from start to finish and to where Dustin Wolf is now, I think I would have a harder time drawing up a better development path than what Wolf has been on.
We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. He is our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. So let's shift it to Rasmus Anderson now. What's your read there in terms of the way this thing goes, where the two sides are, and how this might play itself out in the next, I don't know, year plus or maybe less than that?
Yeah, I was going to say maybe less than that. Look, again, I don't have a crystal ball. I think if push came to shove, the Flames are very comfortable keeping Rasmus Anderson and bringing him back for the final year of his deal. I think they're willing to engage in the conversations of trying to understand what each side is looking for and what a new deal might look like. I think the pull of the market is going to be really strong, and not for Rasmus Anderson from a change perspective, but from a dollar perspective. It's hard to find defensemen of his caliber that can make the impact that he does on a consistent basis. Now, I know that this season wasn't perfect for him. I know that he struggled from time to time, but he also has a ton of value on the other end of it, which is this is a guy that makes a very reasonable salary on the cap, that plays a premium position, that the Flames could use to push and pull at the same time. What does that mean? They don't really want to make a ton of changes to their core. They don't really want to go out and spend a ton. So if you were to take those things and say, hey, maybe we could move Anderson because a long-term deal might not be in the best interest of the Flames for the long term, and then get something back and take that and immediately flip it for some more immediate help that fits the age scheme. Now, maybe it's possible to do that all in one transaction, maybe not, but I think the Flames are going into this summer with eyes wide open, knowing that there is a strong market based on the calls that Craig Conroy has received to this point, and that they're in a position of strength.
I'm fascinated to see where it goes. I thought Rasmus was really forthcoming and honest when he talked about how he just doesn't know how it's going to play out when he spoke to us on Saturday. And there's a lot of market research that needs to be done by Craig Conroy. I like that. That is interesting. Kind of what you're talking about is similar to what the Canucks have done the last couple of years, right? Like in making one trade and then flipping, and like that was Filip Ronick and Marcus Pettersson, right?
Yeah, and I would say, like, maybe, like, to make a Seinfeld reference, like a little importer-exporter. Like, both at the same time, and you're able to pull that off. It's not easy to do, but here's the other thing. When I said position of strength, like, let's say they're unable to come to terms on a deal this summer, and let's say the market is good, but they don't find exactly what they're looking for. There's zero harm in going into next year with Rasmus Anderson on your roster. One, you give your team a leg up and some breathing room in terms of asking young pieces to play over their heads. And two, his value isn't going to be any worse at the trade deadline as an expiring contract than it is at this exact moment in time in the offseason. So they're really in a no-lose situation.
Let's there's lots of other, we can get into some of the UFAs and some of that talk as we continue throughout the off season. Frank, we're chatting with Frank Saravalli, our Daily Faceoff NHL insider, on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. Let's move to some of the news of the day and news of the week around the NHL. And the big one is one of the biggest names in hockey management on his way out in New York. The Islanders and Lou Lamoriello parting ways. Just your reaction to Lou's exit with the Islanders.
It's tough because I think my initial gut visceral reaction is about time. I mean, I wrote a piece last week with some burning off-season questions for the non-playoff teams, and I think one of the first ones I had on the list was, does the New York Islanders ownership have a pulse? And I read that now and I'm like, man, you're probably a bit heavy-handed. But at the same time, I feel like this move is about 3 to 4 years too late for the Islanders, that they kind of were mired in mediocrity and the plan wasn't just doubled down on. It was tripled and quadrupled down on by Lou Lamoriello with aging term laden players that just weren't able to get it done. And so I think that part, you have to kind of park the here and now versus the overview and future. And I think when it comes down to it, Lou Lamoriello will go down as one of the best general managers of all time. And I kind of laughed at a lot of the coverage that I saw today, because I'm thinking, everyone thought when Ray Shero took over replacing or succeeding Lou Lamoriello in New Jersey 10 years ago, that this was the end, that he would hang it up and drift into retirement. And that was before he went to Toronto, which is obviously before he went to Long Island. And I'm just thinking, if you think you know what he's doing next, you have no idea. And I don't, because anyone that pretends to know has no clue. And I think a really special contributor to the game that, you know, at 82 years old is as sharp as he's ever been. Just saw him at the GM meetings a few weeks ago. And I just think with this team, with this moment in time, with this core, that it was time for a change. And I think both those things can be true at the same time.
Yeah. What does this mean for your understanding, what this means for Patrick Waugh and his future as head coach there?
Well, they obviously clashed. Patrick Waugh was very public and open about his criticism for the roster and the personnel decisions, which also really wasn't that much of a shock. I mean, he did have his struggles with Joe Sakic going back to Colorado, which is why it took him so long to get another NHL job. And I think deep down, Patrick Waugh is a really talented coach and teacher. I think that it's going to be up to the next general manager, whoever that is, to decide on Waugh's future. And there is a potential that he comes back and has a place on the Islanders bench, but I could also see a world in which they give him his walking papers and say, we're going to start fresh with our own guy.
Any idea in terms of early candidates as GM, or is that way too early?
I don't know if it's way too early, but again, based on the way that team has been run, I will put the Islanders still, at least for today, in the category of only God and Lou know.
Fair. Very fair. Okay. Let's go to a couple of the other changes. Seattle says goodbye to Dan Bylsma as head coach. And then they also make the management shift where Ron Francis gets bumped up to president. Jason Botterill back as a general manager. What'd you make of all the changes in Seattle?
None of them surprising. We've talked about the coach openings for the last little while, and yeah. I had mentioned a couple times, keep an eye on Seattle and Dan Bylsma even after just one season. Also, going back to my 32 bold predictions from October 7th, in fact, I had mentioned then in that story that I think there was a strong likelihood that Jason Botterill gets bumped up to GM and Ron Francis gets, I'm at a loss for words, failing up to president of hockey operations.
Yeah.
Look, that team has been as mediocre as possible. They were never going to live up to the success that the Golden Knights had in their first run. But I think we've got 8+ years of experience now to know that Ron Francis is maybe the most risk-averse general manager in the league, that they're in a real struggle to find difference makers. And I think if you were to stack up 32 opportunities, one on top of the other, it's hard to envision the Seattle Kraken right now in any position other than the bottom quartile. And that's because they're kind of just stuck in no man's land. They're not a terrible team, so they're never going to be near the lottery. But they don't have enough top-end talent to really make it past that and become a playoff team. And beyond that, even if they were to become a playoff team, we'd look at them the same way we look at so many other of these wild card teams, which is not really an authentic threat. And that's a tough situation to take over, but I'm excited for Jason Botterill, who I think when you see the tenure that Kevin Adams has gotten in Buffalo, 5 years now, and apparently somehow trending towards a sixth, that Botterill only got 3 and was out. And I think it shows you that Buffalo is not an easy place to work. And so to get a second crack at it, was never a guarantee, but mm-hmm. I'm interested to see what he can do and how he can make things different than Ron Francis.
Did it seem inevitable that Greg Cronin was going to be out in Anaheim? Was that one that you were assuming as well?
Yes. Yeah, I just think Greg Cronin wore out his welcome in 1 year. I think the Ducks were ready for change. I think they saw a 21-point improvement, and a lot of that was on the back of Lucas Dostal in net. And I think ultimately the decision that Pat Verbeek and his management staff, if he consulted with them, was that they were never going to get to where they want to get to with Greg Cronin as head coach. And I think that part, that writing was on the wall for a while. And I think what's way more interesting is who's going to be the next guy in Anaheim, because there's obviously some talented pieces and players there mm-hmm. that they haven't gotten enough out of. And I think they've got a big step still to make, and it's the hardest step still to make, which is to go, it's easy to go from, you know, bottom of the barrel to mid. It's a lot harder to go from mid to playoff team. And that part is up to the next coach and these players to figure out.
Last one, do we have our eyes on anybody else on the coaching side of things that hot seat wise we're watching in the next few days here?
Yeah, maybe one more. There's two maybe. Obviously Vancouver is one, and Jim Rutherford, pretty intriguing comments across the board for Vancouver on Monday. Yeah. And then the other one is what happens with the Buffalo Sabres. Like, it seems at this point like Kevin Adams is coming back. Kevin Adams has made the declaration that Lindy Ruff will be back as well. Both of those things seem shocking to me based on this team's lack of success. And so if that is the case, then I guess you could wipe that off the board, but I haven't seen or heard anything yet to make that abundantly clear that that is actually the plan. So maybe until that's reiterated, then maybe we'll hold out some thoughts on what the Buffalo Sabres are ultimately going to become.
Fly safe, my friend. We will talk again next week. Always appreciate the insight. Thanks for doing this as always, Frank, and we'll talk soon. Be well, hey?
Of course. See you, Pat. Have a good night.
You as well. Frank Saravalli, he is our NHL insider, Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com, and he joins us every week, brought to you by our friends at South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.